Good evening, everyone, and welcome to our regular Monday stream. It is technically Evelyn's stream, as I keep
Yes,
telling people.
this is my stream.
My stream. Mine. No one else's.
No one at all. Do it all myself. Simple
To
as.
be fair, you for the last little while, whilst I've had slightly dodgy internet, you have been running all the OBS stuff.
I've been doing it for quite a while, to be honest. I think that's just because I enjoy when we've got like dead air. It's just time for me to like put my OC memes that never really got traction on Twitter on a
Yeah.
Telegram. Not Telegram, sorry, bloody on the YouTube stream.
Well, it's a place to put them, I guess. You gotta put them somewhere. I've enjoyed putting the memes out more. I'm not really enjoying being on Twitter, to be honest. It's kind of miserable.
No, that's
But no, I'm not on Twitter. My intern's on Twitter.
yes, that's the one.
That's the one, my intern. Yes. It's very important we make that distinction. As people have pointed out, that the reason this stream is called War on Terror comes home because Terror's coming home. It's
Yeah.
coming home. It's coming. Terror's coming home.
Oh, see, I'm thinking more meat pie, sausage roll, score a
Yeah.
goal, such and such.
Meat pie sauce. Very, very Greg's ball.
Yes.
Greg's nationalism. No, we ended up because we do our weekly research and we don't have enough stuff from. Kind of stuff we've stumbled across over the week to make a stream we don't stream,
No.
not to be redundant. But we've been very lucky over the last little while that, especially on Mondays, we've had kind of topics coalesce together, and people send us stuff and us come across stuff, and it's really kind of fallen into pretty good jumping off points for pretty big topics. So I'm not disappointed really with the stuff that we've managed to find.
Yeah, no, we've kind of got to a point where, and the people who are sort of regular viewers, I think, will know that there are some topics we've kind of come back to enough that I think we've now kind of got to a point where we could almost probably update weekly every single little thing that's
Yeah.
happened with each story arc, which is slightly what we're doing this evening, but I don't think we would do that as a regular thing.
No.
But
This is,
it's
yeah.
definitely nice to not just check back on these things, but also just see the fact that things we said a few weeks ago, a few months ago, are slowly but surely coming together. However, I think we do have some YouTube related stuff to do before we get into that.
Yeah, we do. Well done. Well done for keeping up with the links. As always, we are still monetized, so you can send super chats, you can send super berries. as God, that's such a terrible old reference. I feel dirty for doing
Berry.
it, but we do also have a Streamlabs you can donate through. That is the best way to donate to us. If you God, why is that still in the buffer? Sorry, I'm trying to get something to copy and paste. It's not playing ball.
Oh, he's not copied the Streamlabs link before he's needed it.
Oh
Oh
no, the Streamlabs link is the best way to
no.
donate because they take less of a cut. That reminds me to actually open Streamlabs because it's not currently open.
See, it's now that I'm gonna break the fourth wall. It's now that I realize that we're back on the infamous one mic setup, that we are actually a
Yes.
lot less flexible than we were before, because now there aren't two people with
No,
computers.
I was too. God damn it! Why is it? It's like forgotten all my stuff for some reason. There's like two people responsible for it overall, but we've kind of become one brain. I only ever keep Streamlabs open because it's supposed to show us, but the YouTube backend is terrible. It also seems that the Streamlabs backend isn't really showing anything either. So
That's great.
that's great. We'll leave it up, but it doesn't appear. There we go. It appears to be displaying now. So we will actually see your donations. We will see your super berries. We will see your all your comments. We do read chat as well, so don't worry about that.
Thanks, better than
Yeah.
chat. Are you saying I need to keep up with all your streams, or else I won't understand the Scrump and Evelyn Infinity War?
Yes. But no, it's the thing is we dip in and out and we try and update pretty regularly. Honestly, this comes at a great jumping off point from the online safety bill stuff that we did.
Yes.
We try and go through different verticals, which is we have a lot of the economic stuff. We have our collapse watch streams, basically. You can see those where the arrow go down, and I've got like a two-part thumbnail I like to do with those. But this is more a security state. But they're all very interlinked with each other. They all kind of bleed into each other. And they all very much create kind of a web, a regime web of what's going on, and hopefully it all makes sense by the time we get to the end of it. But I don't know. You'll all be the judge of that. We have a few disparate threads to go over here. So should we get into it? Is there anything else we've forgotten?
Not that I can think of, no.
We'll probably shell the Substack at some point, but I've got a piece cooking for that that's needs
Yeah.
work. So we'll probably show that when we actually put stuff out on it.
It should be out later in the
And
week, though.
for those of you who've messaged me about the Nomos website, I'm aware of it. I'm currently trying to rebuild it from backups because we had some problem with the. We have a dedicated box that a friend of mine rents in a data center, and we had a drive failure. But it's not. We have backups, but I just need to restore it from backups and archives and stuff like that. And I've not really had time with trying to keep stuff going because we're not really pushing anything or shilling anything at the moment.
No, not entirely.
It's nice
It
to have it.
was down for the most part of a week anyway, so it was down for a week, and then we discovered one day that it's turned into a blank WordPress
Yeah, it's a
website.
blank page right now, but that's because it is back up. The email relay's working, all that stuff is working. I just need to rebuild it from backups, and I just haven't had time. So don't panic. We've not actually lost any data, I don't think, from that at all. So that's
Oh, there's all sorts of interesting people in the chat today, as both Yiz and Leo and all sorts.
yes, it's nice to see familiar faces come back.
Hello, friends.
Hello, friends. Right, we should probably start with what is the jumping off point from the online safety bill?
Yeah, or shall we say, another checkpoint on the road to the continuing PR recovery session for what was originally the Online Harms Bill
Yes.
is now the Online Safety Bill. And if you remember from the stream where we covered that switchover, part of that switchover engrossed this story about Molly Russell, who was this girl, I think she's 14, 15, or whatever, and she'd come across all this quote unquote depressing content on
Yeah. Instagram
yeah, it was
and yeah.
Instagram and Tumblr and this, that, and the next thing. So our weirdo father that is being interviewed here by Piers Morgan had completely neglected her, and she decided to take her life, and that's all her fault for being on the internet or something
Yes,
like that.
that's our
But
fault
there
for being on the
was a
internet.
Guardian writer who, when we looked at the time, I think he had written something like nearly two dozen pieces about Molly Russell
Yeah.
connected with the Online Harms Bill at the time. Then he wrote more when it got changed to the safety bill, and I think
Yes.
it was actually about two dozen pieces
It was 2 dozen, and
across about 2 or 3 months.
no, it was 2 dozen pieces across about 2 weeks. There was multiple pieces a day when we looked at it. I think the highest he released in a 2 day period was five.
But yeah, here is, Molly Russell's father on Piers Morgan's Uncensored, describing the fact that he's received a text message from the cultural secretary about how they're on top of this and they're heartbroken by the story that happened, what, like 5 or 6 years ago now?
Yeah. It happened quite a while ago, but it's been one of the driving forces behind the Online Harms Bill. And it's the reason this is here is because it's a great elucidation of the fact that one, this isn't going away, and
No.
two, this meshes extremely well. Do keep the Online Harms Bill in mind when we go over a lot of this other stuff,
Well,
because
see,
it's vital to the process.
it was quite funny though, because someone had mentioned something about it somewhere, and I was, waiting for them to come up with a new sob story like the Molly Russell thing, and they were asking about it. And all of a sudden, next day, Piers Morgan doesn't come out with a new sob story,
Yeah.
but is harking back on this same sob story that they've tried to kick the can down the road with for months at this point.
As we said, this is basically online harms bill, online safety bill. Pick your name for it, Joe Cox.
Yeah.
As in, this is dead person to push piece of legislation or counter piece of populism, and you see that stuff happening a lot. Yeah, the it's over bill. Yeah,
Oh
I
no.
mean, I don't know. Maybe they'll throw us a bone and give us a "we're so back" bill.
Yeah, no, see, that's the thing. The "it's over" contains its own "we're back," which in and of itself is another rendition of how we are over. But we can only ever be over if we were back in the first place.
Well, yes. One thing we didn't cover, though, when we talked about the Online Harms Bill, at least not in detail, is the fact that there is no Online Harms Bill without the original War on Terror, encountering
Yes,
extremism online
it's all an
stuff.
extension of the 2003 Communications Act,
Yeah. Which.
which I believe was partially written in mind with a a nod to, at the time, what was Islamic terror.
Yeah.
And much like we'll see in one of the things we're going to look at here, Islamic terror, they use the data and the narratives around it because it's real as a sort of touch point to show people, oh, look, there's extremism, and then they actually go and clobber us lot.
Yes, it is. In fact, the report we went over last time we streamed, or was it the time before? The report we went over that talked about radicalism...
That was the last one.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. And conspiracy theorists was very much talking about the Muslim community in Britain. It didn't say it.
No.
Never mentioned them once, which I thought was extremely interesting. It's like, oh, what kind of... What section of the population doesn't believe that Islamic terrorist attacks are happening? Well, the Islamic section. It's very much... They're still using the numbers, they're still using the narrative, but they're not using the names. They've kind of switcherooed it, as it were, around. But the online harms book kind of led me to keep an eye on like biometrics news. And there's very much this weird bun fight going on between all these different agencies, all these different websites, and all these different places that are trying to become basically the Panopticon. Here's a story from biometricupdate.com. I'll zoom out of it again, actually, slightly. Which talks about a complaint filed against Primeyes in UK as a facial recognition web search options grow. This story is kind of terrifying because it's obviously it's a little cover image here. It's just like thousands of people's faces, but
I bet every single one of them's a mulatto, like proper 56%er as well.
Oh god. Some watching the rise of prominence of Face Scraper Clearview AI.
Face Scraper?
Feared a near future in which one company would control so much of humanity's biometric data. Clearview is still considered a danger to conventional ideas about privacy rights by many. But a greater medium-term challenge is forming. Other vendors trading in facial biometrics from the web are arriving, and regulatory bodies around the globe fight to be effective or even stay current with the capability of the technology. The problem is, this is sold from both angles.
Is this also, do these people do like a personality test called like Soul Sucker or something as well? Because Face Scraper's just, I mean, I get it, literally that works, but
yeah.
That's also just a horrendous way to frame it.
It is a horrendous way to frame it. But some Europeans at least do not want their faces on any Clearview server anyway. The firm has been fined for breaking digital privacy laws in France, Italy and Greece. The European Union itself has levied fines on Clearview for how it collects and sells biometric images. The reason I wanted to go over this is because there's the codifying of what is good and bad biometrics. In the EU and the UK, the Online Harms Bill actually purports to limit biometrics, but it greatly expands it.
Mm.
As we keep saying, in slight contrast to other people, it's like how the Stop Woke Act codifies the age at which you can start grooming school children at the age of 10.
It says we're gonna create a regulatory framework around, you know, face scraping AI, and then that regulatory framework we're then gonna apply directly to biometric security, which is a larger part of a different framework of legislation.
Yes, these all seem disparate, but the threads will pick up in a bit, because we have one central report to go over, which I want to get to in relatively short order, so we'll be flying through these first few, I think. Yet no faces collected by Clearview's AI algorithm from social media and other online pages have been deleted from the company's servers. This, again, the internet is forever. It's one of those perennial rules that people forget. According to an article in the tech news and culture publication Wired, because Clearview is a US company with no presence in the EU, regulators in the region have no recourse beyond engaging a hypothetical argument for jurisdiction. This is how the sausage gets made, because you have the EU operating in the US, then you have the US operating in the EU, and you have China operating in the rest of the world and other countries. And basically, by hook or by crook, all this data gets shared and melded together and given to all these different intelligence agencies. It's like how the US was spying on Europe via PRISM and then sending that information to MI5, which would technically be illegal for MI5 to gather. It's that kind of thing.
Can we just look at the three or four choice articles on the right-hand side of the screen? I know, I think for people in chat, they might be slightly cut off. But There's just a three in a row there. ID.me attempts pivot to champion of the unbanked.
I think we went over that one at one point.
Biometric identity verification pilot launches, blah, blah, blah. Crypto thefts explode. Report says user will tolerate ID verification friction to stop it. Problem, reaction, solution.
Yes, basically. It's very, very how the sausage gets made. Clearview tried to burnish its young, pugilistic brand by promoting how the government in Ukraine is using one of its algorithms to reunite families, identify the dead, and spot Russians in the nation illegally. It arguably has seen less success than one of its competitors with its own anti-privacy baggage. The Primize search engine is also uses scraped faces online, and its owners also sell stand in solidarity with Ukraine. Its faces are not from social media, but from other sources, including blogs and news reporting.
So it's just going around, like, taking people's faces off of, like, articles.
Yeah.
From global news, and then is taking them and using them elsewhere in a way that it sees fit.
If an image of you with a name is on the internet, you are in some kind of facial network. That's what I want to communicate to people. There is no getting around this. If you exist on the internet in any capacity, if someone tags you in a photo on Facebook, you're in these databases and you will never leave them.
Oh, no, the Chinese are going to steal my face and put it on Weibo.
Being open to the public, this is the bit that gets me. Primize subscribers with a photo in hand can search for any image. So basically, it's a stalking engine. Skeptics of the face scraping services, including Big Brother Watch, say that it's a search engine can be used to harass others. The advocacy group has filed a complaint with the UK Data Privacy Authority. The company behind Primize, the BBC, is working with police in the United States, United Kingdom, blah, 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 blah. Terms and conditions, its operator is used in place of its owner's name. So it's a shell company, basically. But what I'm going to get to is that the story here is not the controversy with Primize or what's the company called again? Clearview. The issue is that the solution that's always posited to these problems is that the British government must arbitrate these services. And it's not... The argument is never whether biometrics are immoral in the abstract.
No.
It's who controls them.
Yes.
And who is the central authority and who has sovereignty over your face. And the argument here is that Primize, as a public service, as essentially an open source face scraping service, is dangerous. But the government and having databases in general, and there's this whole thing that biometrics is inevitable. That someone is going to control this information and it needs to be regulated rather than destroyed. And that's the outgrowth from the online safety bill stuff.
Well, yeah, it goes all the way back to the first, what was the one? It was the digital market bill that had this bit about porn, which from that became part of the spin-off for the online harms bill as well. And within that, it was like, well, porn is dangerous, it's unregulated, so we're going to dedicate ourselves as the people who are going to control the flow of it.
Yeah, it essentially codifies the right to pornography in law, which is, again, bizarre. It's the opposite of what they were saying it was. But the stuff here is that the argument is not about whether biometric databases should exist or whether biometric databases should be scraped from the internet. You think this would be illegal, wouldn't you?
Mm.
You think that going around the internet, essentially running face crawlers, you'd get banged up for having that kind of database. But no, because governments find them very useful. And again, this is information laundering and a very good example. But where does this lead us? Well, here's a Politico article I came across, which is, I hate a lot of the mainstream kind of coverage of,
Maloney-chan.
Yeah.
Ooh. Weeps.
Basically, this is Politico going, she is the allowable face of villainy, female Trump, blah, blah, blah. But it's a very much a democracy, you know, will Europe manage to survive the attack on democracy from within? What I found interesting about this one, though, was that it's from Pedro Marquis, is a member of the European Parliament and the progressive alliance of socialists and Democrats, vice president for social and external affairs, blah, 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 blah. He's an EU insider.
Mm.
So this is very much the outward puppet show rhetoric of what the EU wants to show. What I want to demonstrate in this is that no longer are they talking about fascists.
Mm.
This is not, if you read the language in here, if you
I mean, I can already see one of the lines, hailing from a party with fascist roots, what, like the SNP?
Yes.
If only.
It's a big thing. It's there's a paragraph here that I want to, because this is something I've seen in many different places, which is the fact that they are no longer using the term.
Oh, this is your thing, yeah, you were talking about this the other day, that now the rhetoric is, we're talking about post-fascists.
Yes.
And I sort of joke to you that possibly the only reason they're really doing this is if you keep calling people fascists, enough people will just turn around and go, well, yes, actually, we are. But if you call someone a post-fascist, they'd be like, oh, but does that mean I don't like them? I do like them. Like, it's a sort of linguistic kind of trap.
There's a lot of this kind of mind-melding with establishment word games, let's say. In academic circles, there's been a struggle to try and identify people. It widens the gambit of who or who isn't a fascist. You know, fascist adjacent, post-fascist, you know, neo-fascist. They're not even talking about neo-fascist here. They're talking post-fascist, which is a very nebulous term and a very, it's very academia-based and very tactical. Because it also, they've been getting into some legal hot water for it too. But it allows them to sidestep, because most people know that the definition of fascism is quite specific. There's been a lot of widening. It's been very terrible.
No, big brain content in the chat's got the answer. We must fight against internalized fascism.
Yes.
And we do that by taking our internal fascism and externalizing it on the world.
Yeah, that's the big thing. Post-fascists are now apparently welcome to join the club. So it's no longer about Europe rejects fascists. It's Europe rejects post-fascists, but not really. So long as they watch their tone and target their hatred toward migrants or those who are different. This is a very critical line, because what this EU politician is saying is he recognises that Meloni isn't actually a threat to the EU's central power structure.
Mm-hmm.
She is not saying that Italy should leave the EU immediately. She is not against NATO.
Mm. Well, carry on here with the next paragraph. From Hungary and Poland all the way to Italy, the coalition of right-wing populists keeps growing. And they keep saying this, but I don't see it anywhere.
No.
The right-wing populism is starting to be like climate change. Apparently, for a good number of European leaders, it seems too hard to imagine Europe working against such a coalition. And while we are witnessing the normalisation of the far right, the European project is at a risk of saying goodbye to its identity. Is that an admittance there that if all of a sudden there is such a thing as Hungarian, Polish, Italian, French, and English identity, that supersedes European identity?
Yes, it really is an admission of that. And what this is a way of folding in and then flattening out all of these supposedly far-right parties. Because if you look at Meloni, you look at the Polish government, you look at Hungary with... what's the guy called in Hungary? I keep forgetting his name.
Viktor Orban.
Orban. You look at Orban in Hungary, you look at all these supposedly slightly fascist governments. None of them, they're all centre-right governments of yesteryear.
God, that's good. There's like some really weird, horrible American chat in here.
Yeah,
as Europe, we are, or were, a project that wanted to integrate everyone.
Yeah.
A project united in diversity for peace and progress. We are a prosperous but aging continent which will wither and wane if we fail to share the European dream with those who seek it. The European dream.
Yeah. This is, again, the rhetoric...
Is that Richard Spencer? Is that like, does he have... Is that his idea, the European dream?
Well, again, federalised Europe requires federalised language, which requires American language. I mean, America doesn't want to admit it to itself, but they went through this process back when the states failed to be states anymore, back when the Federalists won and the states' rights advocates lost.
Mm.
Europe is currently going through that process.
Yeah. Demographic change means there will be fewer and fewer individuals of working age in relation to an active population. Oh, that's the demographic change they're worried about. And this will continue for decades. We are in desperate need of those who want to contribute our society. Of course, we have the right to build a family any way we want, with as many children as we see fit. We have the right to healthcare, which allows us to live longer. However, we also have a responsibility to share this well-being and support the European social model with an integration policy based on equal rights and obligations. Otherwise, our well-being won't be long-lasting. God.
We do have a quick donation here, though, for $5 from Aurelian Nautilus Caesar, long-time supporter of the channel. Thank you. Somewhere out here, there is Indian using your face to send unsolicited pictures.
God, I know all too much about that. See, I'll tell you, it's worse. It's actually white men using my picture, believing that I'm a woman, then trying to like interact with other women online. That bizarre. Was one of the weirdest ones. I was like, what the hell's going on here?
Well, again, the reason this is so important is it talks about the becoming a minority stuff. It comes into some of the stuff we'll be talking about in a little bit, which is the supposed program on the right now is, tell you what, we should probably do that one next, is supposedly pro-immigration. It's, well, we need immigration for GDP.
I do notice this, it's the EU guy, sorry, I saw the Indian name at the top left of the screen. I was like, this isn't by another Indian, is it? But mentioned the guy earlier on. So what, anywhere else in this? We've got some horrific rhetoric to end, more mention of globalization, integrate those who help us prosper and to stand up against fear and hate.
He talks about the death of unionization, blah, blah, blah. It's basically just them saying that even though all of these supposedly fascist movements have abandoned any tenets that would make us even accuse them of being fascist, they have to use the term post-fascist, this is still not enough. And despite Maloney actually completely cucking to the EU on many different issues, to be allowed into power, compromising very, very heavily their program, their roots, the idea of being a truly Italian nationalist party, that will not be enough. And they will always be like the pantomime villains to be, again, flattened down, the new version that comes up, flattened down, and eventually that's how the sausage
gets made.
There
is like a weird... If you read these next two blasty paragraphs at the end here together, there is almost a weird argument for like empire here.
Yeah.
Lacking an institutional solution for the current tension between Democrats and those who repeatedly violate the rule of law and use blackmail on a daily basis, how will Europe finally deal with the rise of the far right? Still plagued by inward-looking national selfishness, will it manage to survive the attacks on democracy from within? The list of those complicit in the damage to Europe's identity is growing by the day. Every time we concede our values, take another blow. And it looks like we'll be stuck discussing how to act against violations of the rule of law, the independence of the judiciary, or the rights of the minorities and migrants for years to come. So this is, like, flat out, you know, we are cutting out the nation state as the high, middle, low.
Yeah, it is.
We're cutting out the nation state as the middle group. The high is reaching directly to the low that is third worlders and saying, no, we're going to exercise our sovereignty essentially over the globe in a certain sense.
Well, what we've seen so far is bringing us back to the online harms bill, we've seen the face databases that really governments are fostering, and now we're seeing rhetoric, we'll see another part of this rhetoric, from what is supposed to be the moderate centre of politics, which is saying that anyone who has a nationalist identity in the most vague, even like a civic nationalist identity, is going to be identified as some kind of against rule of law, against democracy agitator to be dealt with and to be securitized. And that the boogeyman of the far right really is what is the enemy of democracy, and the enemy of democracy increasingly must be dealt with. And that's there's like hidden threats in here. It's just like, well, they violate the rule of law, they violate the independence of the judiciary, they blackmail people, we need to stop these people.
But as a member of the EU, speaking directly as if he represents European sovereignty that is greater than English sovereignty or French sovereignty or...
It's very much them conceding that at this point the EU is completely at odds with any pretense of the rights of national governments, in quotes. And that's very important as you move forward. Because the next article we have here is from The Spectator. I moved this up in the order because it should really be here. which is supposed to be a centre-right.
Well, it's Douglas article. Murray and that yes. sort of type.
We'll go into who this is and where this comes from in a little bit,
yes.
because that's relatively interesting. We'll just have a quick go over that, actually, because it's a little bit of a rabbit hole. But this is somebody from a think tank. He's called James Kirkup, from a supposedly centre-right think tank. And a lot of their former members have gone to join the Tory party, the Tory advisors. But it's just amazing to see The Spectator have a headline saying, cutting immigration means higher taxes. And it's, again...
Well, I think you had a thing up for... He runs part of the Social Market Foundation, I believe.
Yes, it's the Social Market Foundation, which is one of the... Apart from, like, Politics Home or whatever it's called, is one of the biggest think tanks in Britain.
Well, this is exactly like the one we were looking at the other week that did the report we were looking at. You know, it was a guy who'd worked directly under Tony Blair... He'd work for institutions that work hand-in-hand with Tavistock.
Yeah.
I'm sure if we were to go through and look through this website quickly just now, I'm sure at the bottom of the page, even, it might actually tell you the sort of organisations they associate themselves with, or at least normally they will.
It's all the same stuff. It's like Tavistock. It's basically everybody.
Mm.
It's all the same group.
The part of their publication section there. People, places, and democracy.
Well, that's one of the ones we looked at. It's very much them talking about a lot of climate stuff as well. They seem to be very, very...
A lot of climate stuff written by Indians.
Yeah, from a supposedly centre-right think tank. For those who didn't know, it was John Major's favourite think tank. And it was started by Daniel Finkelstein, who was also... He was the chairman of Policy Exchange, that's it, which is the other big, supposedly, centre-right think tank. So, yeah, it's... make of that what you will. Mm. Just to get you in the mindset of who this James Kirkup is. He's very much entrenched in centre-ground Toryism. This is the centre-Tory position. This is... the conservative position in Britain. There's a lot of caveats in here, as we'll get to, but the central conceit of this is you cannot cut immigration without economic collapse. So it goes on to say, only higher than expected numbers of immigrants coming to the UK under the post-Brexit migration regime, funny that seems to have upped it, adds materially to prospects for potential output growth over the coming 5 years relative to the assumptions we made in March. That is from the Office of Budget Responsibility. Responsibility's assessment accompanying the autumn statement is a pretty striking line. The state's official analyst of the public finances says the only good thing to happen in the UK economy since March is higher migration. I mean, it's... We get into a lot of assumptions here. There's the assumption of the independence of the Office for Budget Responsibility. I mean, it's almost like Quislingism. It's like born yesterday.
Well, it's not so much that as well. I think that your sort of average person that is reading this is in a sort of maybe, and again, to bring him up, a sort of Douglas Murray sense, is aware of the negative impact of Islamic immigration. However, reads this and goes, oh, well, do you know what? At least, you know, my coffee's cheap and my grapes are cheap and this, that, and the next thing. Because irrespective of whether or not economically it is a benefit, it doesn't matter because they shouldn't be here.
No.
Even if they were going to pay us all £10,000 each a year, they shouldn't be here.
It's not an economic argument.
No, it's not.
No.
But that's the thing, though, is people who haven't fully stepped out of, and it's something we talked about a number of weeks ago with Panama Hat, that when you really step out of the kind of liberal framework that you're supposed to live within, and you just say, no, I don't fucking want them here.
Yeah.
Not because they cost money, but I just don't want them here. You know, you step out of the need of having a rational or a justification outside of just no.
Yeah.
And they have to try so hard to come up with so much stuff that they have all these excuses. Oh, there's this little tidbit, there's that little tidbit, there's the next thing, to make sure all these people who are still watching Jordan Peterson and this, that, and the next thing don't just come to the conclusion that having brown people here is the wrong choice.
Well, he goes on to say, how much higher? In March, the OBR produced an economic forecast that assumed net migration would run at 130,000 a year for the next 5 years. Now it puts that figure at just over 200,000. Those are the official numbers we know by the audit done of EU and non-EU people here during the whole "I want to stay after Brexit" thing. That number is probably triple, if not quadruple.
Yeah.
So it's possibly as high as like 1 million people a year. And that's just legally, in quotes. So the expected number is about 35% higher. More than that, sorry. It's about 40 to 50% higher than it would have been otherwise. And yet, they're talking about, and it's very much, immigration's running 45% higher than we expected, and here's why that's a good thing.
Mm-hmm.
And then that is wrapped up as the Conservative position.
Well, it also gives them infinite scope as well, as they have done with the Kwarti Kwasang mini-budget.
Yeah.
That if things go tits up in 2 years' time, it won't be because we did lockdown, it's because we didn't have enough migrants.
Yes. That's the way it will be sold. That's the way it was sold to you and everyone else. Is that, well, you are, I'll go into this later, but you are a danger to the UK's economy if you want to cut migration.
Mm.
And they've got a picture.
Well, you are, if you actually go right back to that one we were looking at previously from Politico,
yeah.
If you're against migration, you are attacking the European identity.
Yeah, you're against the European identity and culture. You're against the shared values, and that makes you a...
But I notice here that... why the OBR says it now realises that Britain's post-Brexit immigration system is fairly liberal, fairly, especially to non-EU migrants. Implied in its forecast is the OBR's belief that ministers would keep it that way too. See, I'm forgetting that when Theresa May was going through Brexit, that one of the vital parts was we had to build a direct land bridge from Britain to India that the Indians could walk across.
Yeah, it's amazing that, isn't it? That Europe... Non-European migration. These people are from a very long way away, and yet we just can't stop them. People have consistently voted for decades for lower immigration.
It's harder for people who live in the EU to get here, but from people who don't live in the EU that are just travelling, you know, just fellow travellers passing by, it's a doddle. It's like it's some sort of brown people sieve where the work surface below is Britain.
Well, this is really the spectator going to their audience that you're going to have higher immigration and you're going to fucking lump it. And here's our rationalisation for it. The OBR gets privileged access to government thinking and planning. Its assessment of future migration numbers is based, it's not based, on in part on conversations with the Home Office Migration Advisory Committee. Those numbers may be just forecasts, but there are forecasts firmly grounded in reality of ministerial decisions and intentions. So they're going to keep the faucet open. The fire hose is staying on. Here, I can only say something rather childish. I told you so. Don't doubt this immigration outlet will make some people unhappy. Justifiably, too. It isn't what they were promised, at least by the current Home Secretary, Suella Braverman.
Oh my God, she said she wants net migration to fall below 100,000.
Yeah.
So it was meant to fall below 10,000. It rose to 200,000. It's now meant to fall below 100,000, so we should expect it to rise to 2 million?
Well, this whole song and dance is because of the whole... In the political theatre, Suella Braverman is supposed to be the anti-immigration devil.
Mm.
And she's supposed to...
Ben Gale and Chats got it. The Channel Tunnel got an extension to Mumbai.
And she's supposed to be there as a pantomime villain so that they can, just like they did with Kwarti Kwarteng and Trust, they can say, look... We've proved to you that a low-tax economy is impossible because we engineered a collapse.
Sorry, but can we just this next paragraph?
Yeah.
Nonetheless, I think a bit of outrage about all this is understandable, and I say that as someone who's pretty positive about liberal immigration policies. I don't think the politicians who have adopted the migration policies favoured by people like me... don't know who these people are, have done enough to explain and sell those policies to others who don't take my view.
So the issue... Here's the rub. The issue is you don't hate immigration. You're just uneducated. You just don't know about the benefits of immigration.
Because here's the continuing containment as well.
Yeah.
I am also aware that some unhappy observers of immigration note that the difference between GDP and GDP per capita. Their argument is that adding blah blah blah, who cares? But this is like when the Fox News talks about the great migration, the great replacement, and they say that it's a conspiracy theory to rig voting. No, it's about the ethnic replacement of your people.
Yeah.
The fact that they can come here and vote is just a secondary element, really.
And this is also like a containment thing. I've said, look, they're making us poorer by diluting our GDP. It's like uncut neoliberal arguments. But what underpins this, and like I was saying, is that you to cut taxes is an act of like economic negligence and terrorism.
Was this
to cut immigration, as Swilla Braverman, is to commit like economic terrorism in that way, in that you can't have lower tax, you can't have lower immigration, and here's how the neutral system bears that out.
I just want to open my can of copium and have a sweet drink here.
Oh, yes.
It's a respectable argument, but it overlooks something big and important, the public finances, because we all know they're reliable.
Yeah.
When people work a job, they pay taxes on their income and on the money they spend. Their employer pays tax on those wages and on any profits they make selling the stuff the worker makes or provides. Explain ELI5 economy.
Yeah.
When a job isn't done, those taxes don't get paid, so more work means more economic activity and more tax. Unless, of course, they're getting paid cash in hand.
Yeah, like most of them.
From employers that don't pay tax.
Not even that.
Then they spend money on foreign food stores that also don't pay tax.
This is how you'd phrase it to like a 5-year-old.
That's what I mean by like that.
He's going, well, more people means more economic activity. More economic activity means more money for the government. Well, the government also has more people to provide services for.
Mm.
And if those people are earning less on average, then the public finances get worse. It doesn't even hand by its own logic, but this piece thinks people are...
Again, people have strong feelings about tax. Yeah, and they've got stronger feelings about other stuff.
Yeah.
So is the rest of this all just nonsense, like terrible neoliberal economics?
Yes, it is. It's basically them going out and saying, so what are the politics of all this? Largely, it means pain for the Conservatives. The migration issue makes clear that makes clearer than ever the post-Brexit Conservatives is split between economic liberals and social Conservatives. The division is long-standing, of course, and hasn't yet torn the Conservative Party in two, but I suspect the divide will become a lot more visible as this Parliament continues. As for next Parliament, who knows? It doesn't seem fanciful to wonder if a Conservative Party that suffers a major defeat at the next election can actually continue to be large and flexible enough to contain people who think that Britain must be open to foreign labour for economic reasons, and for people who think it should be not. The return to prominence of anti-immigration insurgent party seems perfectly plausible over the next years. While generally speaking, the British public knows it's growing steadily more relaxed about immigration. Is it? There may be a constituency among Conservative inclined voters for a much hard line on immigration. So he's basically admitting that the Tories will dissolve in some sense and come back as a pro-immigration party. It's kind of an amazing...
But this perfectly ties into the sort of the switcheroo we were talking about with ID or digital ID and UBI. If the Tory party becomes the party of immigration and the Labour party becomes the party of closed borders, then at some point there's going to be like, well, we've both come to the wrong position, so we're going to have an amnesty on this and we're going to sign this, that and the next pact and blah, 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 blah. And it makes it look like something's happened, but in the same sense, no political capital has been sacrificed.
Because
Labour get, you know, if we're to look at this in a, you know, more normie view of left v right, Labour gets to bring in all the quote-unquote voting blocks, and which is actually nowadays a Tory voting block anyway, which is the real twist, is that Labour probably has a bigger white voting block for it than Tory nowadays. But they get to, in the same way, they get to burn up each other's negative, like, social capital.
I was just going to have a look. Again, he's from the Centre for Market, Social Market Foundation, sorry. Again, very large think tank. And this isn't somebody being fanciful. This is somebody who helps craft policy. Again, you know, John Major's favourite think tank, blah, 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 blah. These are establishment insiders. These are the people who know what is coming down the pipeline.
Mm-hmm.
And they're trying to shape it with pieces like this. What does this have to do in the war on terror? Well, what we've seen between what the EU Parliament is saying and what we'll see a bit later is this is the soft edge of it. This is them going, culturally and identity-wise, these ideas are no longer tolerable. The Conservative Party is going to become an open borders party for economic reasons after it collapses and reforms, which is going to happen. It's going to go through a period of contraction. It's going to come back as basically new Tories, as very much like a centre neoliberal party without any of the dirty racism attached
to
it.
Well, yeah, you can sort of see it that the NGOs that have been put out moral busybody nonsense and HR organisations meet in the middle with something like GCHQ or MI5 to discuss with members of the government the standards with which meet terrorism.
Yes.
And extremism. And that's why, and maybe we'll go on to the next one now. Well,
I want to go over this last line.
Fair enough.
There may be constituency among conservative inclined voters for a much harder... So he's redefining the current scepticism in the Conservative Party towards mass immigration as what will in future be considered the hard line on immigration. The view of immigration that was mainstream within the Tory party over the last decade is going to become the far right edge of what is acceptable. And then it is going to become unacceptable in its entirety.
Yes.
And that's what's important about all of this. And as the online harms bill codifies that, because we talked about during our discussion on that, people who threaten the social cohesion or integration of peoples in the UK are seen as being harmful individuals.
Yeah, you're making it a hostile environment for people with a migrant background.
Yes.
Is the exact language they'll probably use.
So what is going on here is Politico, again, EU socialist politician, blah, 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 Maloney, blah, 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 setting up the villains. The Spectator, I think, is the more telling one because it's supposed to be, and who it's coming from, which is a very large centre-right think tank, to a supposedly conservative audience. This is them, you know, the Spectator's supposed to preach to the home county's Tory choir. What they're saying really is here, your version of conservatism, even in its mild form from the past decade, will no longer be acceptable in future. And that you are making an irrational argument. Like you talked about earlier, this is about the argument of the economics of immigration being settled. The Office for Budget Responsibility, the highest authority in the land when it comes to what is good for the country's finances, has said that mass immigration is good for the country's finances. Therefore, if you deny that, you're a science denier or whatever, but you're also somebody who is, well, you can't not want them for economic reasons, you just must be hateful. And it's cutting out all the different rungs of the ladder you could have for having a common sense objection to immigration. That's what this is about, and it becomes very, very apparent when we move on to the next thing, which is, again, the chief of MI5, I think the video's gone missing here somehow. But you brought this one, so do you want to start this one?
Yeah, this is more just a summation. The real meat and bones is the report we'll get into anyway. Yes. But I think this goes back to July. And I saw this mentioned somewhere and thought, I can't really let that slip by because it's, especially with what we covered the other week, it's very apt.
Yeah.
And that they are once again, we will not be able to read through the whole report because it's quite some size.
Tell you what.
Also, they're not even let you read it now. Have they cut their article away?
Apparently, they've cut this away. So right, I'm gonna live archive search this. Apparently, it doesn't exist. But tell you what, we'll save that for posterity. But here's the stub of the article, in that the MI5 director is saying that it's far-right extremist plots in the UK are the current thing.
Yes, I can't remember if it's mentioned in this article or in the later report, but we'll find it either way. But they use some of the worst examples. I mean, they go on to, you know how they did the whole thing with the,
yeah,
they brought in a new law that meant anyone who owned and serviced firearms and ammunition in the UK was basically entitled to a no-knock warrant.
Yeah.
Or the equivalent of that in the UK. So they're showing that there's right-wing terror because they're going to people who they know are nominally right of centre's house that has arms. And they're going, look, they've got arms!
Yes.
It's very self-fulfilling. I don't know if we got the... God, it's taking its time, isn't it?
We have the report here.
We do have the report here.
The thing is that this is a decent kind of surface level stuff of it. I don't know why you put one of those in here, but...
I will say that that article was working when I read it the other day, so I don't know.
Works on mypc.png. times and security. This is the real meat and bones of it, though. This is the actual report. That's more of just a lead-in. As you can see with the little stub here, they mentioned hope. They do the whole 3D printed firearms thing.
Yep, I think...
They're very much kind of going back and forth between it. Again, we are. I will send. I'll put an archive of this in the chat, actually, if people want to read the other article. And we might go back to it in a bit, because it does take a while. But where is the bits of this you want to go over? Because I'm...
If we want to go to the basic intro anyway, because it gets a sort of... You know, they're essentially saying that, yeah, terrorism has changed. I think there's a big section that, you know, between... 2000 and extreme right wing terror in 2012 and 2019, a comparison
is a good section. But this is to do with basically they're coming out and they're putting a big stamp on it, saying this is the future of the war on terror. The war on terror is domestic and it is against extreme right wing terrorists. Mm. And who is extreme right is being rapidly redefined to formally encompass mainstream Tories. That's what we're really trying to get across.
Not
here.
Far off, yes, because we'll get into the part where they begin to talk about cultural nationalism. However, I'm trying to watch the icon on that thing in the top left. And see
it's not going to be done for a long time.
All right, fair
enough.
Kind
of put the wrong link in there. What page is this? There's a long contents here, but they start actually by. I know you put a little. Is this the snip you put in?
No, I've got that, but that's further down, and that's something we can get into as we get there, because I want to discuss at least their idea of cultural nationalism first before we get to it. But they start with Brenton Tarrant, the Christchurch shooting.
In New Zealand.
Yes, it was all over the news. It's this, that, and the next thing. They've got their mention of 8chan, the fact that he was streaming it, and that, you know, much like we've gone through with some of the Hope Not Hate reports, is they basically look at that as an isolated example and go, well, let's just take everything everyone in the UK that's doing that has a relation to each one of these things and just tie it all together anyway, irrespective of whether or not there's actually any real activism going on. Because as people who are in our scene will know, there really isn't a major amount of actual real-world activism happening.
No.
Most of what's going on is really just stuff like this. Streams, videos, articles, and the odd sort of IRL event that's only really just started recently.
Well, we have here as well, I detect a lingering attachment in parts of MI5 to the notion that right-wing extremism plotting does not engage their national security function in the same way Islamist plotting does. Whatever the status of that position in the past, it can surely not survive the detonation by Anders Breivik of a bomb outside the Prime Minister's office in Oslo, or the terrorist murders by Thomas. Here we go. The terrorist murder of Thomas Fair by Joe Cox MP, which is something that's not talked about that much anymore because it's a very suspicious thing that happened that nobody really buys into that much. Thomas Mayer, is an extremely odd character whose motivations are largely unknown.
Well, I'm gonna skip past that because I could probably get us in a ridiculous amount of trouble if we started questioning that to any great extent. Point four here.
Yeah.
The transfer of responsibility marked a major change in approach. Extreme right-wing terrorism is now assessed using the same language and methodology as that used in relation to the Islamist terrorist threat and is incorporated into the UK threat level assessment. The committee therefore considered it important to review how the transition has worked, from areas such as the transfer of data to the recruitment of the covert human intelligence sources.
Which is the bill we went through in the past, yes.
Last year, for anyone that knows. And what the government's strategy and MI5 and CTP's operational approach now is. It is also crucial to understand what the impact has been on the other areas of MI5's work, as it has had to absorb this new area of work and build its understanding of this increasingly complex and diverse threat.
We'll actually go over a little bit of this here.
Is it working now?
Yeah. He talks about Islamic terrorism. This is from 5 days ago. Mm. So this is very recent. And this is the reason that we're talking about it coming home.
Yes.
They're now using the tools that we were told would only be used on foreign citizens and essentially suspects in this country who are from foreign origin, who are Islamists. And now we're being told that basically people in the UK who believe what may or may not be formally mainstream ideas are now the focus of MI5.
Well, look as well. This third paragraph could have been in the Hope Not Hate report we read earlier on in the year. And we don't see as much of a reflection of this in the MI5 report, but there's definitely a hint of this, which is the pivot away from right-wing ideology being the target to nebulous ideas about conspiracy theories.
So he said the problem is, national action, and it's moved from real-world groups to a diffuse online threat. And the activities of right-wing extremist influencers operating globally to spread
Hello.
conspiracy theories and explain and inflame grievances. Who are we waving to?
They're talking to us.
Oh,
The
yes.
we're right-wing extremist influencers.
He added, from the comfort of their bedroom, oh no, individuals are able to access right-wing extremist spaces, network with each other, and move towards a radical mindset. Often weapons are sought for their own sake, well in advance of any specific targeting intent developing. So again, that's a weird thing of saying, well, we don't have to prove intent. All we have to prove is that people have expressed curiosity about weapons, making for difficult risk management judgments and forcing early intervention. They're basically saying they can't prove intent there.
No, which is why they need to go to people's houses who have done nothing wrong but are, aesthetically right wing in some way, shape, or form, and go, look, these people have got arms, they've got fireworks, they're only allowed to have 125 bullets, but they've got 135, so they're a terrorist.
They're basically going, they talk about the.
Look at the one at the bottom there, the last paragraph. Islamist terrorism remains the larger problem. About three quarters of our terrorist caseload, much of the volume is self-radicalized terrorists seeking to conduct low sophistication attacks. Low sophistication does not mean low impact. Think of the appalling murder of Sudan. Poofed. They brushed that one under the rug, the David Ames thing.
Yes, they did.
But if there is 75% of all terrorism in the UK, at least according to these statistics they're quoting, is Islamist.
So, what is with this new focus? Again, they're having to really, really stretch it. They're talking about people possessing weapons, but possessing them without intent. It's very nebulous here, and it's very much like you said that they're moved towards conspiracy theories and inflamed grievances. What does MI5 care about conspiracy theories and inflamed grievances? How is that part of their remit unless they're moving more towards a, I hate to use the thought police term, but as a thought policing exercise.
Shall we go back to the full report and we'll cover a couple points in that then?
Yes, we shall. I'm going to close these
Yeah,
two.
I think we should get to the, 'cause the I think it may be worth putting the link for this in the chat as well for anyone that wants to read it through. We did spend a good sort of half hour poking through this the other day.
Yes.
There's plenty of stuff in here about Mosley and the BNP and all the other groups and a national action and this, that, and the next thing. However, I don't know if it's easier just to search through words. I found it really interesting, sorry, that they began to talk about cultural nationalist groups, as they call them. On
It's
page, that'll be like 25 or 26 or something. Yeah, so here's their sort of typology or whatever you call it for
Yes.
these different variations of right-wing extremism. Cultural nationalism is a belief that Western culture, in quotes, is under threat from mass immigration into Europe and from a lack of integration by certain ethnic and cultural groups. So even if the integration isn't high enough nowadays, you're an extremist.
Yeah, so this is where the stuff we've talked about previously comes in. This is the trick that they're saying that if you believe that mass immigration is a problem, or you believe that mass immigration has caused a crisis of integration, you're a right-wing extremist. You're a culturally nationalist right-wing extremist in their belief. And they kind of add some fig leaves to this later on, we'll go into. But ultimately, if you believe that immigration is a problem in any way, you are a right-wing extremist to be targeted by MI5. That is what there's no way around what this is saying. The ideologies tend to focus on the rejection of cultural practices such as the wearing of the burqa or the perceived rise of the use of Sharia law. In the UK, this has been closely associated with anti-Islam groups. It's very interesting that the same people who essentially cultivated the, you know, the brown person with a backpack panic.
Yeah.
The stay vigilant, stay. But you see it on train stills, as I've talked about previously. The, you know, see it, say it, sorted stuff, and all of that. It's very much a leftover from that 2003, as we talked about the towelhead era. Really. Yeah. The bomb Iran. The go find.
Yeah, we're
Bin
all
Laden and his,
we're all watching,
you know,
Jeff Dunham do like Ahmed the Dead terrorist bits.
Yeah,
and
yeah, we're all very much in the
you can all call
Team
them
America.
You can all call them Arabs.
Yeah, yeah, Arabs. And it's
Homer's wearing the Ayatollah t-shirt and Simpsons.
It's interesting because this is a problem that they have themselves in a way mainstreamed. They have created in many ways an Islamic panic.
Mm.
I mean, they've been the government's been firehosing these people in the meantime.
So they made their own Islamophobia? Why would they do this?
It's, yeah, they've essentially, they are the people who have very much fostered this idea that at any moment a Muslim could explode. As I've talked to people before, it's very rare in the UK, really. Mm. It's not something, you're more likely to die in a plane crash, probably. It's much more likely you're going to get, you know, beaten to death and no one's ever going
to
report on it.
Well, yeah, it's more the fact
that
you
no-go
get
zone.
Yeah, you get hacked up the street because you went to the wrong bit of Birmingham.
Yeah.
There's another one as well, point 35. I don't have the page number, but it should be sort of roughly page 20-odd.
Right, there's, in January 2020, there was a further shift in the terminology used by the intelligence and security agencies, with right-wing extremist ideologies brigaded significantly differently into the following categories: white supremacists and white nationalists, cultural nationalists, and identitarians. Keep in mind, they're keeping this category of cultural nationalist as a category of extremists. The importance of terminology, blah, blah, blah. We are not. They're basically just justifying the fact that they're creating these different groups within terrorist terminology.
Yeah, the Yiz is like, what if I'm all three of these?
You get us a special card.
Yeah, you get to go to the cool gulag with all of us. I will say as well, I can't remember where it is in here, but they do talk about the fact that if we start locking these people up en masse, we're going to need to find a way to stop them communicating with each other in prison. Yeah, exactly.
Yeah. Basically, they justify the terminology, they talk about right-wing terrorism, then this is quite... extreme right-wing terrorism should be used as an umbrella term covering the various sub-ideologies identified by JTAC, very America there. Mm. Cultural nationalism, white nationalism, and white supremacism. There would, however, be no changes to the way the threats would be evaluated. They're saying that cultural nationalism, feeling a bit iffy about immigration, in MI5's eyes, is the same as being like a full-on white nationalist.
Yeah.
In terms of the terminology. You're still a right-wing terrorist suspect. This addition of extreme to the prefix to right-wing terrorism makes it clear that mainstream political views are not what operational organizations are interested in, but they very, very clearly defined that they were right here. They define what a cultural nationalist is.
I mean, the Daily Mail, talking about the situation in Leicester,
yeah,
Leicestershire, said that there wasn't enough integration
yeah.
on their paper. At the same time this report came out. So is the Daily Mail now an extreme right-wing source? Are we back to that paradigm? Yeah, but no, there's one, as a point 35 or whatever, it should be a few pages further down, is one that really interested me.
We will quickly scroll through them here, blah, 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 MI5. Key differences, recruitment demographics, they basically just talk about, oh, this change.
Yeah, there we go.
Here we go.
That section here. Homeland Security Group advises that the main extreme right-wing threat, or sorry, terror threat, comes from self-initiated terrorists, i.e. whom they identify as persons who mobilize to threaten or use violence without material support or personal direction from a terrorist organization, but who may still be influenced or encouraged by the rhetoric or ideology of your group. You know, this is our now written in MI5 documentation as Theodore Adorno's idea and the authoritarian personality that inside every person is Hitler.
Yeah.
I mean, that's... And then they continue on here. JTAC assessment, the right-wing terrorist threat to the UK. A major driver of the ERWT threat is the online space where sites dominated by right-wing extremists provide encouragement and guidance for terrorist attacks. As with Islam's terrorism, the online space provides a platform for individuals to self-radicalise and converse with like-minded individuals domestically and internationally.
Yeah.
So there's your excuse for having a anti-right-wing terror section in your online safety bill, because inside every person's head is Hitler, and online is all the information you need to be Hitler.
Here's the second point, saying real world extreme right wing terrorist group threat, that high profile disruptions of National Action members since the group's proscription in December 2016 and the subsequent prescriptions of alternative names for the group have likely dissuaded others from forming similar groups in the UK. So publicly being right wing outside of the Overton window is illegal in the UK.
Which is something we're not the only people that have talked about this. I think it's one of the ones, Thomas 77, he always mentions the fact that, you know, since 1945 it has actually been illegal to be an organised right-wing group, which is probably entirely true. But to the extent as well that, like, when you call yourself Nationalist X or Patriot Y, you're done.
Yeah.
You're not allowed to exercise that, even the aesthetic of nationalism.
No. Is there any other parts of this you want to go through in detail?
No, not really, because I think that's one of the most interesting sections, to be honest, is the idea that, you know, every individual is a potential terrorist.
Let's have a quick look around just the cultural nationalism stuff.
We can do, if you want.
Cultural nationalism, cultural nationalists, cultural nationalist groups. We went over this, this is more detail here. Again, this is like the fig leaf here. The Director General of MI5 explained the pervasiveness of cultural nationalism across the extreme right-wing spectrum, noting that there have been a number of examples of self-initiated terrorist attacks linked to cultural naturalist narratives. This is the bit I found most interesting when I read it. If it were the case that, for the sake of argument, the white supremacist strand of this was consistently the most dangerous. But if you look at the particular instances of right-wing extremists have mounted attacks in the country, Thomas Mayer against Joe Cox in 2006, and then Darren Osborne outside Finsbury Park Mosque in 2017, and then Vincent Fuller, the man who stabbed the Bulgarian individual in 2009. Again, all of these are like... a lot of them are extremely isolated incidents of violence.
I'm sure Darren Osborne's brakes just failed.
Yeah. the whole thing is just like, well, one guy stabbed one Bulgarian in 2019. This is the extent of...
Well, it gets even more laughable, because I believe if you scroll down a bit further,
in no case was any of these three assailants a confirmed white supremacist individual. They were more, if you will, cultural nationalists, basically people who didn't, you know, the narrative is that these are people who thought immigration was a bit dodgy, each with a very strong anti-Islam sentiment in their makeup, and so it is difficult because the violence is not distributed in the same way that the sort of extremity of some of the ideological views are distributed. They're removing the fig leaf here, and what they're saying is that even if you are quote unquote a moderate in on the right wing extremism spectrum, we still consider you an equal threat.
Well, because you're part of the gateway.
Yeah.
You're doing the legwork for the real extremists.
They talk about the Identitarian movement.
I do believe there's a further section here on incels.
There is a section on incels here, but this is the bit that got... They're defining, again, their definition of cultural nationalism applies to all of this. They say it back here. Lack of integration, threat from mass migration. That's all you need to believe to be considered a cultural nationalist. And that puts you in this spectrum of online or extreme right-wing terrorists. Again, I will restate it. If you believe that there is too much immigration going on, or if you believe that the amount of immigration is leading to problems with cultural integration, you are a cultural nationalist by the definition of MI5, and they consider you as likely to carry out terrorist attack as a white supremacist. It really kind of cuts back on the there's no point being a moderate thing.
No.
It really cuts back into that. And that no matter what you believe, they will always find a way to come for you. That is what this all says. And it's very crucial because we went over the Spectator article, went over the Political article, and they're really setting up what isn't culturally or kind of identity acceptable within the European identity or the British identity.
Mm.
And here we have the other side of it, which is MI5 is codifying partially in law, because these all create legal precedents. These all end up going as legal guidelines to things like judges. Who isn't a extreme right-wing terrorist, basically?
Well, I have just noticed that there is a Jay Burden in the chat. Hello, good sir. But there, you know, it'll be interesting to see, and we'll probably do a stream on it about February time next year when the next Hope Not Hate report comes out. How much of this language appears in there?
Yes.
And as we were talking about the other day, the idea of cultural nationalism is actually one they sowed the seeds for in the report from last year, was it not?
Yes, it was. They also mention it in a few other places. They don't use the term cultural nationalism, but they do talk about basically the fact that civic nationalism is now a form of unacceptable nationalism.
Mm.
Cultural nationalism, by the way, is not a term that's existed before this, really.
No.
It's been in academic circles under various definitions. People have combined the words cultural nationalism before, but not to this specific definition. This is really a term they've kind of made up.
Yes.
It's an extra umbrella term because if they were just going after white nationalists, or essentially if they were just going after the goose steppers, they wouldn't be able to make a case for this. There is so little of that that it's very difficult for them to make a case for it. But if you redefine an extreme right-wing position as, again, I will read you the definition, a belief that Western culture is under threat from mass migration into Europe and from a lack of integration by certain ethnic and cultural groups. I'd say that's a position that most men over the age of 40 in the UK believe.
Yeah.
That is
I mean, it's right down to your sort of almost Adorno level of, oh, inside every person is Hitler. There just needs to be the right environmental yes. conditions to bring it out. And the internet is that environment.
Anyway, that's the first framing about this. But the next part of this balancing act, really, we talked about the digital ID stuff, we've talked about the biometric stuff, and we've talked about the online safety bill stuff. But voter ID, which is supposedly a kind of like a right-wing issue, it's supposed to be, it's very much fed into now by the US narrative of making our elections more safe. Mm. We have here, it's from electoralreform.org.uk, this. It's not a, it's got a slight principled opposition to voter ID. They say it makes democracy harder, blah, blah, blah. But really what this is sowing the seeds of the technical aspect of having to have digital ID.
Their problem is not that it gatekeeps democracy. Their problem is that modern ID systems gatekeep disadvantaged peoples. It's the ID systems themselves that are not democratized heavily enough.
Okay, that's, yeah.
There are the, you know, in the sense that we used to always talk about the undocumented.
Yes. They now talk about the unbanked and the unID'd.
It'll be the unidentified.
Yeah.
And I mean, there's not really too much to read in this thing. I just consider the fact that it's worth watching these sort of lefty things where they're saying that, oh, well, young people are discriminated because they don't have passports. Well, of course, the instant solution is, well, you just have a universal form of biometric ID that fits yes. both the government's voting standards and the left's standards of democratized, open, you know, identification protocols.
Here we go. The government intends the new identification rules be in place by next year's local elections. It alongside concerns, blah, 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 traditional association of electoral administration have raised those fears. A volunteer polling staff can also make decisions. For anyone following the US midterms, again, you're right, this is all very much a setup. I don't know if they actually, do they actually use the term digital ID?
No, they don't. But again, it's one of those things that makes me wonder whether or not a mention of it will crop up soon enough.
Yes. You're right in that it very much feels like a setup. It feels like they're kind of doing the lead-in to it. Because voter ID is coming in the UK. It's been coming for about 10 years, honestly. Mm-hmm. They keep putting it back, and there's all these practical stuff about, ooh, people can't afford it. It's very much from the US kind of side of things. Ooh, you know, brown people are too poor or stupid to do ID, is the thrust of the argument here. Mm. But what is being proposed as a solution to it is basically a government-issued universal ID that everyone must have.
Yes.
That you must have an ID that will end up being digital and end up being biometric.
I mean, again, this is peak Blair.
Yeah.
This is Blair's legacy project, that digital ID and national ID was going to be the solution for terrorism. It was going to be the solution for immigration. It's going to be the solution for robust democracy. It's going to be the solution for your internet security.
The funny thing is that the voter ID stuff is conservative-led, and yet the ID cards are Labour-led.
Yes.
We're doing more of the switcheroo here. But the last story I want to cover, which is amazing because of what it glosses over, is a story from ITV here. They're trying their best to get us to accept the ISIS bride from the tabloids, Shamima Bigham, back in the UK. They are, you know, the UK can't make people stateless, blah, 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 blah. That's a bit too zoomed in. But there's an amazing admission here that I actually missed this. Apparently this has been known for, or at least been suspected for months, but this is final confirmation of it. This is from only 3 days ago. Ex-Canadian spy calls for Shamima Bingham's UK return after spy agency cover-up. Well, what cover-up was that? A former Canadian intelligence officer has called for Shamima Bingham to be returned to the UK because of what she claims were failures and a cover-up involving the spy agency she once worked for. Haduka Makbul, who used to be a senior officer in the Canadian intelligence service, says her former colleagues broke their own rules because the smuggler who brought Miss Bingham and two school friends into Syria was also working as a covert source for the agency at the time. That's a bizarre admission.
We'll carry on here.
Yeah.
The 23-year-old was stripped of her British citizenship in February 2019 when the Home Secretary judged her to be a threat to national security. But Ms. Begum's lawyers are likely to argue she should have had her nationality reinstated because she was a victim of trafficking and was smuggled in by double agent Mohammed al-Rashid.
I mean, we've been over the fact that basically all of ISIS's weapons came from, like, Israel and MI5 and the CIA through the good rebels. But this is just an amazing admission that the Canadian Intelligence Service, a member of the Five Eyes, by the way, the Anglosphere Intelligence Services are very much unified.
Mm.
And they are very also integrated pretty heavily into the CIA and the US system. That one of the main intelligence services in the world, really, people don't think about the Canadian intelligence services there, but they are very much linked up with everyone else, was involved in human trafficking British citizens into Syria.
They try and cover it up. We've got the next two here.
Yeah.
I think it's important to repatriate her to the UK as well as making sure that she has the support, said Miss Mukbil, who has assessed the evidence of the role played by al-Rashid while he was under Canadian direction. It's a traumatic experience to be exploited in this way, unfortunately, by a Canadian source and to be trafficked and exploited by ISIS fighters. So the Canadian brought her there, but the trafficking and the exploitation was done by ISIS fighters? Sure.
It almost feels like there was the trafficking exploitation was done by the Canadian state.
Yeah.
But that's a different argument. It also really just, like, I honestly understand how many British Muslims feel. Imagine being, like, hammered with, like, ISIS rhetoric for years and then finding out that Shamima Bingham, the face of home radicalization of British Muslims, was smuggled into, you know, the ISIS territory by the Canadian intelligence services. As much as they don't belong here, it's cruel to psyop them as much as done.
Yeah.
You can't help but feel sorry for the brothers, you know?
This is full circle why you have a picture of Bowden next to Osama bin Laden thumbnail.
This is why thumbnail. For those of you who don't know, that's Jonathan Bowden next to
if people don't know who Jonathan Bowden is, they shouldn't be here.
They shouldn't really be here, no. If you don't know who he is, look up some of his speeches. But really what we have here, I also like, it looks like they're both trying not to laugh.
Yeah, they're both cracking a wry smile.
Bin Laden's like, oh, Bowden, you crazy, you firecracker, you know?
I was going to say, we'll get through the last wee bit of this here, because this is kind of interesting. Miss Muckbill, who worked in the UK and the Middle East during the rise of ISIS, believes the Canadian Intelligence Agency did not follow proper procedures in its engagement with al-Rashid, so details of his involvement in the case should now be made public. CSIS is alleged to have broken rules preventing its human sources from engaging in illegal activities or carrying out work on the behalf of the service. Well, it's a good thing the Five Eyes are going to pass the CHIS bill so that you can't charge people for that anymore.
That is no longer illegal, by the way.
Yeah. It would be in violation of its own rules. That's what secret agencies are for, to work in the violation of rules. Who's familiar with the Canadian procedures around agent handling, we want to know what has happened and once the Canadian spies became aware that they were minors.
So, wait a minute. So they knew that the trafficking was happening.
But it's only now that they're minors that retrospectively decided it's not good.
That means that operationally they knew that this was taking place. It's not like, oopsie doopsie, we didn't know what our source was doing. No, they knew what their source was doing.
Yeah.
They just did, oh, it's very, well, we didn't know they're underage. That's such a, again, there's so many admissions in this, and it's written from the perspective of poor Shemima Bingham. Poor ISIS bride.
Yeah, ministerial approvals are necessary, so that in itself is a failure. Then not owing up to that failure and saying something wrong here is a fail. What? I don't know who wrote that one.
Why aren't the intelligence services preventing people being human trafficked into ISIS territory?
Because they're doing it.
because they're the ones doing
it. We might not have known that the source smuggled minors, but the moment that we did, everything else after that lined up. Mistakes do happen, but it's what you do with it afterwards that counts. And so not sharing information with the Metropolitan Police was a mistake, in my opinion. Even after Scotland Yard launched an urgent investigation into the whereabouts of the missing schoolgirls, Canadian spies sat on the information for several weeks before handing over the details to British investigators, according to The Secret History of the Five Eyes by Richard Kerbadge. But do you know what I reckon's actually happened here? The Scotland Yard has gone, where are these schoolgirls? The Canadian intelligence force has gone, and they've gone, oh, well, they're probably dead. Scrap their citizenship then.
Yeah. Essentially. Now, the whole thing has become this weird, again...
Very sorry.
The drama that trafficking people into ISIS territory causes is now outweighed by the fact that they want to rehabilitate the whole, ooh, poor British Muslims. They're doing the whole push and pull of the British Muslim community is both kind of agitation and integration, in that you can hate them, but you can only hate them in the way that regime tells you to hate them.
Just look at this line here. It was only once Turkish authorities arrested al-Rashid more than a week after the girls entered Syria that CSIS informed British police that their agent had transported the teens.
It's just amazing that the Five Eyes, supposedly the most integrated group...
I can't wait to listen to the Shemima Begum The Blame Game on Apple Podcasts, all 2.5 hours of it.
That's what this is all about, though. It's about rehabilitating the image of ISIS brides, which is bizarre, but doing it in a way that they are able to admit through that context that they essentially created ISIS and then fueled ISIS and then funneled them underage women. How is the headline not Canadian Security Services traffic minors into ISIS territory? Why haven't these people been, you know, taken out of circulation and punished? Again, there's no operational discussion about the fact that these people should be removed. It's just an oopsie doopsie.
Mm-hmm.
Oopsie doopsie, also poor Shemima Bingham. We are so far away from the politics being genuine that this is how this is framed. And again, it's all whilst the British intelligence services are telling us that cultural nationalists are a clear and present danger to the security of the British state. Because as they say in their report, The plurality of cases they mention are by people they would define as cultural nationalists, not white nationalists.
Mm-hmm.
You know, not neo-Nazis. All whilst the same intelligence services are linked up within the Five Eyes and trafficking schoolgirls into ISIS territory, knowingly.
As you do.
As you do. This is, again, very much what we see here, what we see happening in terms of foreign agents and foreign rhetoric in Ukraine is going to come home as well.
She's coming home.
Yes.
She's coming home. It's... Jemima Begum's coming home.
Yeah, she's, ISIS is coming home, boys. And so is the war on terror.
Death to America.
It's very much... Oh, do I close that? I shouldn't have closed that if I did. Oh, no, it's on this page. There we go. I'll double-check the Streamlabs to make sure I haven't missed any donations. It sometimes just doesn't show up. But we'll do our normal shilling now, since we have kind of the peak people here generally at the end. Do interact with these videos. I know it's cringe to say, but liking and commenting does mean that you actually see them.
I just noticed the Woodlander in chat identify as a female Muslim minor. I watch out for the Canadian Security Forces. That's all I'm saying.
We can give you a free. They can give you a free vacation to Syria.
There's gonna be a van that smells of maple syrup. It's gonna peel up, and no one's gonna see you again.
Wanna go to Syria, eh?
Yeah.
They're gonna show up in a snowmobile. Yeah,
they got Tim Hortons here.
How are you on a snowmobile? It's not been snowing. Never you mind, eh? But yeah, do interact with the videos. Do give us the algorithm boost, because like I know it's horrible cringe. We are blatantly gaming the system. But everyone else does it anyway. Like and subscribe, blah, 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 blah. But it does make a difference.
At least we know we're gaming the system. That's what makes it all right.
Yeah, it's you're doing it ironically, guys. It doesn't count.
Yeah, it's for the greater good.
Yeah, yeah. Comment, like, subscribe, ironically.
Touch the bell? I don't know.
As always, I'll put it over here. We don't actually have our Nomos website up right now, but we do have the roundups and the speeches. The roundups on our YouTube channel, and the speeches are on the Substack. We have also linked in previous places, but I think Panama Hat speech we've shilled. If you would like to follow us anywhere, do follow us on the Telegram. I will put the link in chat. The link is also down below in the description of all our videos. But if you want our more serious kind of commentary, as serious as it gets, we are a bit silly sometimes.
I'm touching no bell, I'm a minor.
Oh dear, that's pretty good. The Telegram channel, my intern is running a Twitter account for me. I'm not going to link that because it's a silly place. But if you look for me, you'll probably find me on Twitter somewhere.
Not you.
Yeah.
Look for your assistant.
Yeah, yeah. If you look for my brand... You'll find you'll find my brand somewhere on Twitter, but it's not run by me. It's not run by me.
We're still using the same IPO.
Yeah, yeah, we're still using the exact same IPO. I'm trying to think of. We don't really have much else to show, but there probably won't be a stream on Thursday.
No, probably not.
Because I'm on holiday this week basically, and we're quite busy in general. But there will not, unfortunately,
there'll probably
be
another one next Monday.
Yeah, we try and do them at least weekly. It's kind of Monday or Thursday. We struggled to do it Monday and Thursday just because of time constraints, but we'll try and get back to that at some point. It's nice. If we have a glut of ideas, it is nice to get them out of the way. We'll try and get some more structured content going at some point.
Mm.
I would like to do something maybe on like Theodore Adorno.
Well, yeah, it was something I'd suggest to you. Maybe we do a little thing called like Know Your Enemies or whatever, which would be some of the stuff we would like to do as part of a post-democratization thing, but instead of having to write up like 3 hours, we can just like condense
do individual
profiles
topics
into like an hour and a bit.
Yeah, yeah. I think having individual topics on that would be much easier way of framing it, so it can be a little bit looser. We need to also do our skit streams at some point. I get constant messages, where's the Hyperborea stream? Have you done the Hyperborea stream yet?
It proved to me that I'm one of the lost tribes.
Yes, basically. So that we will be doing more skits content at some point. Again, thank you guys for joining us. We're kind of getting towards winding down here. Thanks to everyone who's still a member of the channel. There's a very consistent number of people who still are. That does help out. Thanks to the people who've donated. And again, we will probably see you next Monday. Do keep an eye out though. Before then, I will probably have a piece of writing out on the Substack on Anti-Politics, so do check back there if you would like to see some of our written content, because there'll be a big one. It's just a bit of a mess right now. Okay, guys, have a good evening, and goodbye.
Good evening.
There we go, we're off the air now.